Hello, I'm your host, Erin Gruwell, and welcome to the Freedom Writers Podcast. Today's show is episode number 31, featuring thought-provoking discussions on how to better understand young people and their stories. You'll hear exclusive content recorded at one of our Freedom Writer Teacher Institutes and learn to peel back the layers on even the toughest kids so that they can reach their full potential. I hope this discussion leaves you feeling enlightened and empowered to make a difference. The Freedom Writers and I have the privilege of visiting schools and communities all over the world. We meet educators, parents, and students from all walks of life. Everyone comes with their unique questions and challenges. Something people often ask me is, how did you reach all of your students? And I tell them, my students reach inside themselves and discover their own worth and power. The key to that process is actually quite simple, and it's the question that lies at the heart of the teacher training we host each year. Unfortunately, so many educators and so many parents are worn down and troubled. They have such strong desires to serve their students and their children, to help them feel safe and feel supported, to help them graduate, help them pursue a happy, successful life. But so often these educators and these parents feel alone in their efforts to make a difference, or they just don't know how to reach that tough kid who everyone says is just a dropout waiting to happen. Or perhaps they become so bogged down by the pressures of the system and the stresses of everyday life that they've forgotten why they became a teacher or a parent in the first place. If you or someone you know feels that way, you are not alone. When I was teaching in room 203, people told me that it wasn't worth it, that I shouldn't even try, that my kids were unteachable. Many times I was tempted to believe them, but my underlying hope for my students and my belief in them and their potential ultimately grew enough to outweigh the adversity. And at the end of a four-year journey, all 150 of my students walked across that stage and received their diploma. All 150 Freedom Writers graduated because of what they discovered within themselves. On today's episode, you'll get an exclusive glimpse into our five-day intensive workshop, the Freedom Writer Teacher Institute, where we unpack that process of discovery. We'll take you into the room as 25 beloved educators from across the globe learn to peel back the layers on their students and on themselves. You'll witness as we explore important questions in search of even more important answers. Why do people act the way they do? How does sharing their stories give them access to healing? How does healing make room for deeper learning and growth? And how can you, as an educator or as a parent, effectively and empathically facilitate this transformational process? As we approach National Teacher Appreciation Day in May, I'm excited to share this episode with you and honor all the amazing educators in all of our lives. Whether you're an educator or a parent, I hope you hear something in these activities that sparks a question and inspires a change. Above all, I hope you feel the support and empowerment that come from being connected to a global network of educators who strive every day, just like you, to make a difference in the lives of young people. Without further ado, here's a glimpse into the Freedom Writer Teacher Institute, where you'll hear a sample of some of our activities that make up the secret sauce to our success in room 203. First thing I want you to do is I want you to picture somebody who has been incredibly difficult, incredibly challenging, gets under your skin, who follows you home at night and you dream about them, someone that might have been sent away to a principal or an administrator, someone that might have been on probation, been a part of juvenile hall. I want you to think about that kid. And I'm gonna ask Robin to give each and every one of you an open head. I'm gonna talk to you guys about the kinds of kids that this institute is really trying to grab. It's the kid that's loitering in the hall. It's the kid who is picked up by their probation officer. It's the kid who is sitting in the back brooding and throwing out finger gestures and calling you names you probably don't know. But you need to know those names, and you will learn those names. So I want to tell you about a kid that got under my skin.
This young student walked into my classroom on day one. Ironically, I was wearing polka dots and pearls, and in she came with an attitude. Sat with Toronto City, glaring at me, throwing up her gang signs, carving her initials on the desk, trying to disguise the ankle monitor around her leg, and trying to let everybody in that class know she was miserable. And she was gonna make me as miserable as she was. She did a really good job. In her mind, at any time I was gonna run to the principal, ask for my leave, go to law school like I was supposed to, and realize that this teaching gig was a hoax. And so looking at that young girl, what I did not understand was her story. I didn't understand where she came from. I didn't understand what she was experiencing. I didn't understand everything that was going on in her life. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna ask Kyle to take a couple notes on this board. We're gonna talk about what was going on inside her head, and we're also gonna talk about the external factors. For this young girl, what I realized, if you could write a few words in here, is that the most important thing was that she was angry. She was angry. It was a hostile world, and she was taught fight or flight, and she was a fighter. And her father gave her shiny red boxing gloves at the age of 5, and said, when life knocks you down, you better get back up swinging. So she learned how to swing first, and she learned how to swing fast. And she learned how to keep a stiff upper lip. And she learned never to cry, because if you cry, you may never stop. So keep that stiff upper lip. And never show their weakness, because if you do, everyone's gonna attack you. So she was angry, she was violent in her mind, she was miserable, she felt displaced. And all of those things that come with feeling alienated and being told every single day, you are dumb, you are stupid, and you are nothing. And if you are a 14-year-old kid and every single day someone tells you you are dumb, you are stupid, and you are nothing, you believe it. And you act accordingly. And so all of those words were percolating in her mind. I am dumb. I am stupid. I am nothing. The external factors, which I had no way of knowing at the time, became painfully evident shortly thereafter. She lived in a community that was in an ethnic war. Gangs fighting gangs, African-American gangs fighting Latinos, Latinos fighting Asians, Caucasians fighting African-Americans. So in her mind, at the age of 14, she was a soldier. This was not Afghanistan or Iraq, but in her mind, this was a war. On the outside, there was gangs, there was an ethnic war, extreme poverty. To go home and how are you supposed to do your homework when the lights have been turned off? How are you supposed to do homework when there's no food in the refrigerator and you're starving? How are you supposed to go to school and try to feel good about yourself when you don't have new clothes and you don't have a new haircut and you don't have all of the gadgets and toys that everyone else has? She also had a father that was currently in a maximum security prison, San Quentin. So her father was locked up, and the only time she would see him is if she went to that prison, talked to her father with that orange jumpsuit, hoping that she might get 5 minutes, 5 minutes to be told that she was a woman warrior or an Aztec princess. Her mother had a second grade education. So at 7 years old, her mother had dropped out of school and was doing menial jobs, cleaning homes, scrubbing toilets in hotels, working her fingers to the bones in sweatshops. Poverty was a part of who she was. But there's also that amazing thing about turning on television or escaping your reality. So if you are a kid and you live in that circumstance and you try to escape and you turn on television, you see how the other side lives, or you go to those movies and for 2 hours escape your reality and see how other people live. She knew there was this shiny toy out there that she was never gonna grasp, because in her mind, she was numb. She was anesthetized, and she was convinced, I'm going back to juvenile hall. Because I got an ankle monitor around my leg. I got a probation officer. I got a rap sheet. I tell you all those things because it's a very complex situation for a very complex young girl. And everyone in the education system told me she's not gonna make it. She's not gonna make it past her first week, her first month, her first semester, her first year. She's not gonna graduate. She's gonna disappear. That was my day one in room 203 as a brand new teacher. What I'd like you to do right now is to identify in your mind, whether it's in your parish, whether it's in your classroom, some kid who was difficult, who has been told they were dumb and believed it, been shown they were stupid and believed it, walked into your world with gaping wounds, whether they were metaphorical or literal. But I want you just for a few minutes to write some of those words down of your kid in your place and what is going on in their head, if you can imagine, and circumstantially, what's happening in their community. So think about that kid who walks into your class and they're pissed off at the world. Put that kid down. It may be that kid who's just struggling to figure out, how can I go one day without being called a name? One day without feeling so self-conscious that I just want the floor to swallow me whole. One day without wanting to feel invisible. That one day is all I got. Put that kid down. Each and every one of you hopefully can have that image emblazoned in your brain of who gets under your skin and realizing that there's so many internal factors that are coming from those external factors. That is where we're starting. If there are 25 of you, those 25 kids are not going to fall through the cracks. Not on our watch. I will be damned. Because I had 150 of those kids. And through the activities that we're going to do over the next few days, we're going to learn together, how do we look at those isms? How do we challenge to come to you and say, I need something and I'm even afraid to ask for whatever that is because I don't even know what it is. Whether it's a look or a stare or a handshake or a hug, I need something. Because I don't feel whole. And maybe you can help me feel whole. Whether it's a kid that said, I was sent to the principal and I was terrified, but he was really cool. Because I have a feeling that a lot of the kids in your community are coming to the principal and you may be the only male that they interact with. There may not be a father in the home, like with Ramon, that may be a single mom. And so when they come in and see the principal, you're going to be that first foray into what does it mean to be noble and to be just and to fight the good fight, not put up my dukes, not pull up that spray can, not reach for that handgun, but to fight the good fight. Throughout these exercises, that's the kid in your mind that you're going to get. That's the kid that you're going to fixate on. You're not allowed to send them away. You're going to keep them in your room. It's going to be a hate-free zone. You're going to be able to create a classroom that is inclusive, that feels like a family, and allows those kids to start feeling whole. But the next activity, what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to go back to that place and that mindset of being 14, and I want you to identify what color you would be. I'd like you to do something to that crayon, to write words, or to draw images, or to take us back. What were you like at 14? Why did you choose that color? What was going on in your life? And I've asked Tony to choose a crayon, a color that symbolizes who they were at the age of 14. And then I've asked them to do something metaphorically to this crayon, to take out the label, to break the point. And what they do to this crayon will symbolize what was going on inside of them. Tony, will you join us? Tell us about your crayon.
I picked yellow because I feel like I come from a dark place, and yellow is really bright. And it's really sharp because you have to be smart to be a smartass. And when I was a kid, my mom would tell me that when we were at a birthday party or a quinceañera or something, and she couldn't find me, she would just look for a group of kids that were laughing, and I was in the middle telling jokes. And I felt like I was like the brightest thing around. And then I started school, and I felt like that was taken away from me. Like somebody changed the paper that I was writing on, and I had to write on like white paper. And when you take a yellow crayon and you write on white paper, you can't see it. And I felt like that love for life was taken away from me by a couple of bad teachers. And then I just kind of blended in. And I also broke it, just like on the surface. But if you try like using it, then you're like, oh crap, this kid's broken. But as I got older and used my crayon a little more, the sharpness started coming back. And I started realizing that it wasn't my crayon that was broken. It was the paper that was wrong. And instead of changing my crayon, I just changed the paper. So it is now black. And now I went back to being the brightest thing in it.
the game we're about to do is very serious. And so to get kids out of their head, what we usually do is start out being very silly. Kids love to dance, but the idea is to change the mood a little bit, to be silly, to be whimsical, and then we're gonna get serious. And so for the little while that we're in this room, I'm going to ask a series of questions. And when I ask those questions, I'm gonna ask that you come all the way to the line. So it's the physicality of going from where you are to this line. Sometimes there'll be the majority of you, so it will feel very comforting. And sometimes you might be out here with a few, and other times you might be out here by yourself. There is no gravitational pull that says you have to stand on this line. So it is a choice, but it does have visceral responses, a feeling isolated on one side, feeling community with another, feeling transparent, or feeling invisible. So to make sure that you are all paying attention, the first question I'm gonna ask is, step to the line if you are a Freedom Rider teacher. Freedom Rider teachers. That's all of you. Okay, perfect. Step back. As I ask questions, sometimes I'll phrase them, if you know someone, so it gives you an out, it doesn't have to be you. Sometimes that someone may or may not be you. So the first question I'm going to ask is, stand on the line if you know someone, who is poor. Stay on the line if that someone was at one point you. Stay on the line if that someone who was poor at some point was you. Okay, step back. Stay on the line if you have ever been homeless. Step back. Stay on the line if you were raised with one parent. Just one parent, a mother or a father. Stand in line if you are raising children as a single parent. Stand in line if you are raising children as a single parent. Stand in the line if you know somebody with a learning disability. Stay on the line if you are that somebody who has been diagnosed with a learning disability. Stand back. Stay on the line if you've ever known someone who was abused. Stay on the line if you know anyone who's ever been in foster care. Stand on the line if you have ever been abandoned by a parent, a loved one, a friend. Stand the line if you were adopted. Join the line if you've ever adopted someone. Stand in the line if you have ever been bullied. Step on the line if you've ever known someone who at one point in their life was struggling with their sexual identity. Stand in the line if you know somebody suffering with depression. Stay on the line if that someone is you. Stay on the line if you've ever known someone who has attempted suicide. Stay on the line if that person tragically succeeded. Stand in line if you've ever lost a friend or relative to senseless violence. Stand in line if you've lost more than one friend, two friends, three friends, four, five or more. What I'd like to do now is turn it over to those of you that may have a question. There may be a question I didn't answer. Maybe I didn't phrase it the right way. Maybe I didn't think of it.
Step to the line if you ever felt like you had to be the adult in your house when you were a child.
Step to the line if you have a close relative who's in prison or has ever been in prison.
Step to the line if you had to really work hard to love a part of yourself that others hated. It could be your skin color, your sexuality, your gender. And stay on the line if you find that you still have to work through those things every day.
What I'd like to do now is ask you guys some questions. Darnell, the first part of your question was really difficult. And the second part was even more difficult. What did that feel like? To have so many people in solidarity with you.
I don't know if this is answering the question, but I often think that there's a term that comes to mind, a wounded healer, which is often describes those who are in helping professions like education.
Mm-hmm.
And often when we come to spaces like this, we talk about the youth that we work with and all of their issues. And it's just interesting to see that we ourselves are also working through. We're in process. And if we are in process, why can we not even imagine that the youth that we're engaging are also in process? So it keeps me humble to remember that I am no different than any of the youth who come before me.
When you walked into our lives, most of you were strangers, coming from different corners of our globe, not really sure what you were going to be encountering on this magic carpet ride. We've tried to peel back the layers and really have you bear witness and know our past so we can change our future. This toast is for each and every one of you to go back into your communities and to really feel that you yourself are revitalized, that you've re-engaged your own methodology of wanting to be a helper and a healer. That each and every one of you go back feeling enlightened, that aha moment came for you specifically, that it was visceral and you felt it, and also that moment of feeling empowered that you can go forth and to conquer anything. And it is very bittersweet for me because I already miss you. Even though you come from far and wide, I don't want to lose you as part of this incredible movement and this incredible opportunity to make change, and we're gonna make change through education, to change the education system as we know it, and to continue to teach to a kid and to not teach to a test. Cheers.
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 Our institutes typically consist of 25 educators from various schools and organizations across the globe. Everywhere from Nebraska to New Zealand, Rhode Island to Rwanda, and Montana to the Middle East. We have a map on the wall here at the office in Long Beach that marks the location of each Freedom Rider teacher in our ever-expanding network. I love to see the map getting more and more filled as each year passes, because it means that more and more teachers are serving and empowering their students to reach their full potential. Sometimes we have the special opportunity to host an institute that is entirely sponsored by either one school district or one community. I love this focused model because it allows us to dig deep and develop solutions for their community's specific needs and challenges. Our largest Freedom Rider teacher district is our beloved Moreno Valley Unified School District in Riverside County, California. Their superintendent, Dr. Martin Rex Ketziora, a close colleague of mine for 2 decades, went through the Institute in 2014 and has since sponsored over 100 of his teachers, staff, and board members to attend our Institute. And by the end of 2019, we will have nearly 150 Freedom Rider teachers in Moreno Valley. I'm so honored that the Freedom Rider teachers family is so strong in Moreno Valley, and I love hearing their stories of transformation and growth as we continue to collaborate. I want to give you the chance to hear directly from Dr. Ketziora about his experience at the Institute and the impact he has seen in his school district as the number of Moreno Valley Freedom Rider teachers continue to grow. There's a lot to learn from his loving example of leadership and the sensitivity to his teachers. But most importantly, to the students they all humbly serve. Here's my dear friend and colleague and Freedom Rider teacher extraordinaire, Dr. Martin Rex Kedziora.
I'm Dr. Kedziora. I'm the superintendent of the Moreno Valley Unified School District. It's the third largest district in Riverside County. We educate over 33,000 students and became aware of the book in 2001. I was a principal of a K-8 school, kindergarten through eighth grade school, and my teachers had told me how bad the kids were. And they told me they couldn't write. Because I used to read kids' writing when I was a principal, because it's one of the ways I think people can do better is through their writing. But I found the Freedom Riders book, and when I read the book, I was like, how did she do that? You know, like, it was like amazing. But then I went to something, so I got to hear her. And Erin was just as vivacious and outgoing and charismatic as she is today. And I was like, oh my gosh, she taught these kids, you know, she's still excited. They're still around her. I'm thinking that's the kind of connection you want with, you know, kids and schools. I don't think I realized it as much until I went through the 5-day institute. I did not know what that institute was going to do. But in that experience, we went to places that I think you go sometimes. Like, I've been to the Museum of Tolerance. I've heard a Holocaust survivor. But I haven't always heard them in the context of what I learned in the institute. You know, like when the Freedom Riders, when they're side by side with you and they're still coming back and they're telling their stories and they're retelling their stories and you're meeting people that you read about in this book, you realize, like, once one of them said to me, I still have holes in my heart and they haven't been filled, and that's why I come back. I think I'm more appreciative of where people are and that we don't always get them to where we think they are. There's still more to do. You know, that's one of the things I learned by being in her institute. And I remembered that. And so everywhere I've ever been since that time, whether I've been a principal or a director or assistant superintendent or superintendent, I've always wanted Erin to be part of what we do. There's over 100 people that have gone through this in our district, and there's more that will go, because I don't think there's another person that I've brought into our organization or what any place I work that has had the kind of effect that she has on the system. And I see that when people have been around her or trained by her, they are more capable and confident, and they get what she has. I find that better than anything, because, you know, I was a high school English teacher like Erin Gruel, and I had a lot of problems. And I wished I had gone through something like the Institute, or, you know, could have had that experience sooner, because I was a good teacher, but I didn't always exercise the patience, the kindness, or sometimes I would resign myself to that student may not be able to do this, you know. And I don't do that anymore. You know, neither do these people either. Well, I mean, our return on our investment here is much greater than what we invest. I mean, when you transform people and they have a new way of being and a new way of looking at things, they're different in their schools and their classrooms, but it's more purposeful, and I just see them more passionate and more resolved. They remain determined to make sure that children feel that someone does care about them and they will find a way. And that's what I see in classrooms after teachers have been to this, and principals and administrators and board members. We have 2 school board members that went through this. And when I bring something to them, like, I must start crying. You know, I don't ever know, like, how they're gonna take something, but there was a student that I didn't want to expel. He was a foster kid, and the school had been really insistent on, you know, that he had to be punished and he had to learn the consequence. But he was a foster kid, and I happened to know the kid really well. I said, well, I don't think he needs to be expelled. I think we need to rethink how he's working with the school and how we support that student. So when I came to them and There were a couple of board members who hadn't been through this, and they were like, so every kid's going to get a pass. I said, I didn't say every kid. I said, but this one, we need to think differently. You know, Mr. Holguin and CJ Johnson, who'd been through this, they said, yeah, I think we should support this effort. They're nice people, but I don't know that they would have been that resolved in doing that, because, you know, we get criticized when we don't follow something. And I think that it was all right with them. They weren't thinking about the consequences or the impact of their decision. They were thinking about the student. I think sometimes we don't have the courage or the resolve to think that if I talk to this kid, are they going to, you know, cuss me out or yell at me or something, or should I just leave them alone? And so when I was at a high school one day here, there was a kid asleep in the back of the class, and one of the students said, don't wake him up, Dr. Kedziora. And I said, oh. So I got down beside him, I kneeled down, and I just knocked on his desk a little, and he looked up at me, and he said, yeah. And I said, I just wondered what you were doing. And he goes, what am I supposed to be doing? And I said, well, you know, it's school and the teacher's in here, and are you tired? No, I just don't like to do anything. Now, I'm not going to stay there, you know, forever, but one of the things I saw happen was the kid saw me talk to this kid. Other people said, leave him alone. And I remember doing that, leaving them alone. But I think because of the Freedom Riders, I'm not a person that walks by and leaves it alone. I say something, and I don't say something mean or sarcastic. I say, you know, we care about you, and here's my card, and I'm the superintendent. You can send me an email, and if you need something, let me know. Maybe I can help. It's really not that you're a psychiatrist or you're a psychologist. It's just that you're a human being, and you say you care. And then they're like, you do? And that's what's so odd to me, because I always think, don't they know? But I don't think we tell them ever. And I think that's what part of this does, is helps you understand that, you know, that that's important to let other adults know. I don't think that, you know, people always realize they can solve a problem through being civil and being supportive, and, you know, that everybody doesn't have to get in trouble. And yes, he was doing something wrong, but I think what we teach people is really more valuable than, you know, consequences. I didn't always know that the institutes were going to be so successful, but I think that once they go to it and once they have that experience, they're going to find that other people will want to have it too. And it's a natural kind of thing. It's a natural inclination, because every time you come back, or when you go, or when you experience it, you don't know exactly when it's going to affect you. But every day when I'm doing something, I will evaluate in my mind, what would a Freedom Rider teacher do? Or what would Aaron Grewell do? Or what would one of those Freedom Rider children want me to do? You know, how would they want me to respond to this? And I think sometimes we just resign ourselves to, I can only do so much, and I hope that they're okay. But I think through this experience and this opportunity, we're better able to help people realize their potential. And I think we've served people in a greater way. I don't think that we always realize the capacity that we have and that we can do more and do better. And I think this helps us do that. And I think that's what this is about, is developing a better way of making people feel.
As we conclude today's episode, I hope you have some powerful takeaways that can help in the work you do. Every new Freedom Rider teacher leaves our institute with their own unique insights into themselves, their students, and their communities. As we approach National Teacher Appreciation Day this May, we'd like to acknowledge the educators that make up our vibrant global network and share their voices with you.
As an educator, there are so many things that we do that we don't necessarily realize why we're doing what we do. After coming through the Institute, I felt like that I was doing things more on purpose.
I think people learn that they're creating their own story every day, and what they're doing has meaning.
It's time to recruit. It's time to get the word out.
What unites everyone is a set of beliefs that education can be used to make people's lives better.
When you leave Freedom Riders Institute, you know it's all about the kids.
I'm actually home around civil people, good people who care. That's a blessed feeling.
The world right now makes me very afraid. And I'm leaving not so afraid because they give me hope and they believe what I believe, that we can truly make a difference.
Other professional development maybe teaches you a new skill or a new graphic organizer, but Freedom Riders teaches you how to rebuild communities.
This experience for the last 4 or 5 days has left me speechless. The way I look at my kids, my situation, my own life now, will forever be changed.
You cannot put it into words. You have to experience it. And I guarantee when you do experience it, you do grow as an educator and you do grow as a person.
Well, a teacher really needs to be renewed and see value and purpose in what they do.
Education has unlimited possibilities for good. That's what the Freedom Riders means to me.
In 5 days, I have relationships that I never dreamed of having.
We showed up strangers. We left one family.
You have an immediate network of other educators around the world that you can go to.
There's this bond between all of us. I can't think of any group of people that I've ever met in my life that it feels more like family and love to me than the Freedom Riders. And I want to do anything I can do to help all those kids out there get the best education and make the world the best place it could be.
The teachers in the group are generous, authentic, and they're so excited to do what I'm excited to do, and it's the very first time I've had that.
You leave here having grown both personally and professionally.
So I think for anyone who's thinking about, is this something I want to plug into? Is this an organization worth getting involved with? I've found nothing has been more powerful for me than exposure to this story, relationships with these people, being part of this process. And I think the more people who are exposed to this, the better off our education system's gonna be.
I'm so grateful to all our Freedom Rider teachers for believing in the Freedom Rider story and courageously serving their students every single day. They inspire me and the Freedom Riders to be better. Superintendents like Dr. Martin Rex Ketsiora help us stay committed to our mission of empowering educators to help students reach their full potential. The phenomenal educators that attend our institutes are everything from classroom teachers to principals, staff members to superintendents, from public to private schools, elementary to high schools, and even universities. We also have educators who may not be teachers with a capital T. We have program directors in juvenile halls, youth leaders at churches or synagogues, museum curators, social workers, outreach coordinators, and the list goes on and on. The truth is, if you work in any capacity to use education to make a difference in the world, especially in the lives of young people, the Freedom Rider Teacher Institute is for you. Our network for Freedom Rider teachers is almost 800 strong and growing, and we want you to be a part of it. We need your story and your spirit to add to this movement of love, hope, and transformation. If you'd like to learn more about our Freedom Rider Teacher Institute, or apply for an upcoming workshop, or even sponsor a talented teacher, we've added a link to this episode's show notes. Please tell us your story and help us understand what we can do to support you in empowering your students. We're here for you so you can be there for them. That's our mission, to change one kid, one class, one community at a time. May we all think about the internal and external factors that may be influencing our youth. May we gain greater access to our own past so we can be better in the present. And may we look to the future, believing that our small and simple acts of service will create a stronger, more equitable education system for every young person. Once again, I'm your host, Erin Gruwell. This episode was produced and edited by Bryce Sirier and Rob Falk. Thank you so much for joining us. And until next time, dear listeners, may you write what needs to be written and tell what needs to be told.